Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round one recap for this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational, storylines, scorecards, and betting odds for the rest of the week. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, hello, sir.
What up? I'm trying to add up Spieth's strokes gained approach over the last 8 rounds. He's gonna win the Masters.
Hold on, don't do that. I'll send you his distance per shot. And we'll see if you feel the same way.
I don't know why I'm leading with Spieth. He just caught my eye that he shoots 68. He can't put. Oh, look at this. This is a professional producing here by producer Josh. Can't get the cameras right, but he's got the graphics ready. No, I'm just giving you a hard time, Josh. Spieth 68. Can't throw it in the ocean, can't put it in the ocean, whatever the phrase is. He's kind of hitting it well, though. I'm kind of excited. It doesn't take a lot to get me excited about Spieth, but still.
Yeah, I'm excited, but I've been here before. I you know, let's see a second round. Let's see a third round. He actually does this a lot. So you and I generally do the Thursday nights. He's always in it on a Thursday night. About him at a ridiculously high rate.
He did this at Sony, and then he missed the cut.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Check in this time tomorrow. Spoiler alert. John Rahm, very good at golf. Seven,
unbelievable.
7 under 65. I'm sure Josh will show us the scorecard. If you're not watching on YouTube these days, you are missing out. John Rahm out of the gate, birdie, 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 then plays his next, what is that, 11 holes, even par, then finishes eagle, birdie, birdie. So did all the work on the bookends of this thing.
Yeah, sorry, I'm still adding this speed thing up. he said that after his round, too. He kind of talked about how he ended the way he began, and he's just... Man, the thing that struck me about him, and they were talking about this on the broadcast, and I'm glad they brought that up, and the numbers bear it out. He didn't drive it that well. I think he was negative off the tee. And he's just, we've talked about this a million times, Rick. He's so good in every facet. And I tweeted the meme of like the upgrade meme from Tiger to Rahm, which is mostly a joke. But like, I don't know that people are the Rahm thing is weird, man. Like the way that I guess people on Twitter receive him is kind of like, yeah, okay, let's see if he does it in a major. And I'm going, no, you don't understand what's going on right now. This is like DJ and what was the year he fell down the stairs? 17, 18. I think it was 17.
Right. 17. I
when he wins three going into the Masters. This is like that, but better, and according to Rahm's career, more sustainable, at least at this level. So I think he's been in the top 7 on the leaderboard in 19 after 19 of his last 21 PGA Tour rounds, which that can't happen, right? Like that doesn't happen. and it's happening. And I just don't know that people are fully. This is the best field of the year, Rick, and he beats the field after two wins and three or whatever the numbers are, five wins and nine starts. He beats the field by seven strokes on Thursday to start out what could be his third elevated or designated win in four starts.
Yeah. So like what's different, right? Because we're already seeing the stats and they're true, right? He's gaining over three strokes per round this season. There's still a lot of season to go, but it's a very, very small list of guys that have done this for an entire year. We haven't even played a major yet. I get it. Yada, yada, yada. So what's different? Is it wind luck? Is it the short game has been fixed? You know, we were sitting here in the offseason, and I think both you and I pegged John Rahm as like, buddy, this rubber band is going to snap back. This pendulum is going to swing the other way, and it's going to be super scary. In no way did I think he was maybe going to win four of his first like six PGA Tour starts and add a couple in worldwide, but this was coming.
Yeah, it's not win luck. I don't think. I mean, I'm kind of looking through it right now. So we'll go back to 2020. So expected PGA Tour wins 2020 was 2.3. He won two. Okay. 21, it was 2.3. He won one. Okay. 22, it was 2.5. He won three. So that's kind of all even. His expected wins in 2023, Rick, is already above three, which is not a number that he's touched or really gotten that close to in any of the last, four years. So he's won he's won the number of tournaments that he's been expected to win. It's putting, right? Like it's short game.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a stat in the offseason. So he had a historic driving year last year. He gained at least a stroke off the tee, which is like it's only happened like 15 times, and he got the least out of it of anyone who has ever done that historically. The average for those guys was like 2.8 wins. They averaged like third on the FedEx Cup points or the money list or whatever. It was just like he got nothing out of it. He got one win in Mexico out of it, which was a 3.5-1 favorite to win it. And so he's still that guy, and now he still has the great short game, but he is just lights out with the flat stick.
Yeah, it's putting. It's also, you know, and this is a little anecdotal, but it's also statistically true. This is the best he's ever hit his irons, and I wonder. Surely he's talked about that or been asked about it. I haven't seen, maybe you've seen a response to that or an answer to that.
No.
Cause I'd be very curious about that. Whether he's being more aggressive or playing a little bit safer or hitting more toward the middle of the green or what, because the putting is it's better than his average, but it's not crazy. Like it's not at a rate where you're like, this is out of control. The iron play has been really good. And I don't know if that's a distance control thing. I don't know if that's a golf ball thing, but I wish I was out there, cause I would ask him about it at API, but I would be very curious to kind of talk to him more in depth about that part of it.
John Rahm will get a quick turnaround. He will be out there on Friday morning. He has two shots clear of Chris Kirk, Cam Young, Kirk Kitayama. Where do you want to go, KP? Kirk or Cam Young?
Both are interesting. I think Cam Young is somebody that I can't remember if I had him in any of my bets this week. I liked him a lot coming into the week. Did I throw him in? I think I had him for a win.
Somebody did. Hold on, I'll pull it up.
I think Patrick and I think both of us did, because I switched over to
Patrick and you flopped from Rory to Cam Young.
Yeah, which that was
sharp.
Turns out to be a good call. You know, Cam Young, it feels a little Scottie Scheffler-ish from the end of 2021, where you and I are sitting here saying, hey, need to win, kind of got to, you know, what's the deal here? And he could win three of his next seven, and that wouldn't be stunning, you know? Is he going to? Probably not, because the fields are freaking good right now. But yeah, I mean, he's probably the best player in the world. I probably shouldn't say this off the cuff, but I think he's the best player in the world that's never won a PGA Tour event. Fleetwood? Like right now, he's probably the best player in the world that's never won a tour event.
That's pretty good. I'm scrolling through the list of names, and I cannot find another that I would counter with. So, yes, it's either him or Sahith.
Or Fleetwood.
Or Fleetwood. I think it's Kepka.
Yeah, I think it is too. And, you know, people I talk to are like, hey, this guy might be the best driver in the world. And I think that is not something that we – like when you think best driver in the world, your brain doesn't go immediately to Cam Young, right?
That is an opening 5-under 67 for Cam Young. He goes from 36-1 to 18-1. Chris Kirk at it again, fresh off his victory at Honda, says, I play well at Bay Hill. I might as well just continue. His last 4 years have all been top 15s, and he is right there again, KP.
Yeah, he's been awesome at Bay Hill. Do I sound okay? Or the AirPods?
Yeah, you sound great. I don't know what happened.
That was weird. Yeah, Kirk's been, I was, you know, coming into this week, I was kind of doing some research on him. I was shocked. I didn't really remember him playing as well as he did at Bay Hill. And, you know, this is a little bit of an example of, you know, kind of what, we're going to talk about. I presume we're going to talk about, with like the designated event guys that can get hot or that can play you can play your way into a designated event. He's not a great example of it, 'cause he was like a top 50 player already, but he's a decent example of like, oh, like Chris Kirk is having him like a month, right? He's having a moment, and that can be career changing. It's a little bit like, and I'm not saying this is true of Kirk, although it might be, it's a little bit like Horschel FedEx Cup in, what was that, 2014?
Yeah, where he just rattled off two playoff events.
Where he wins, I think it was Cherry Hills, he wins a FedEx Cup, he wins all this stuff, and you're like, wow, Billy Horschel had a career in 6 weeks, or whatever, 5 weeks. And I think you might start to see more of that from the Horschels and Chris Kirks of the world, given the sort of structure that the PGA Tour is implementing.
Big logjam behind these guys at 4-under. Here are the names all tied for fifth. Adam Shank, Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth, Aaron Rye, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Ricky Fowler, Keegan Bradley, take your pick. My pick is Scottie Scheffler, because he's already 1-for-1 in title defenses and trying to run it back again for this year. Via Jay Ray, Justin Ray on Twitter, two defending champions have started with a 68 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Matt Every did it in 2015. Tiger Woods did it in 2009. Both of them would go on to capture victory. So Scottie Scheffler is going to have to deal with all these other names lurking and a Jon Rahm buzzsaw, but he is still in position to complete what we have dubbed as the Scottie Slam.
Well, think about the Scottie Slam. Think about how much I was saying about this after the round, Rick. Think about how much we'd be talking about Scheffler if not for Rahm, right?
Right.
And that's a little bit of, Scheffler is just, I think his personality a little bit matches his game, where you listen to him and you watch him and you're like, okay, yeah, it's good. He's solid. He's just like a solid guy, solid to listen to, has good stuff to say, but nothing extraordinary. He's just solid. And then it's like 68 after 68 after 68 after 68. And he just keeps winning big events. And, you know, it was interesting. Datagolf pointed this out, and I had seen it coming into this week. I can't remember what their time frame was, but the one that I looked at was last 50 rounds, Scheffler, and you probably have this too on Rick Run Good. Last 50 rounds, Scheffler had, was a better ball striker than Jon Rahm, which is crazy given how good and how hot Rahm has been. Speaking of ball striking, by the way, I looked up Cam Young's stuff. He's been way better as a ball striker so far this season, and just atrocious with his short game, which I don't know that I really realized that. Now he hasn't played a ton, but
the other thing is his best finish was the Saudi event, which we don't have any strokes gained breakdown from. So it's like you assume he didn't punt five strokes in the short game and still finished second there. So it is a little bit tough, but yeah, that was kind of one thing that separated him from, because not a lot of guys can hit it as well as he does off the tee and have the short game touch. That separates him from a lot of guys.
If you had, how about this? If you had to pick not a betting favorite, but like you are staking the future of your business on one guy to win the Masters, are you taking Rahm or Scotty? Like today,
Rahm.
I don't know. I mean, it probably is, but Scotty's been unbelievable.
Yeah, they have. Listen, I've been lucky enough. You know, we've been out on the road a little bit, but I just being able to see those guys in person and see John Rahm in person at Riviera and in Phoenix, it does not feel normal and it doesn't feel fair and it's scary.
Yeah, I think what you're referencing and getting at, and people, if you've been out there watching Rahm or, you know, there's other guys that are like this, but it almost feels like, and I don't know if this is because his swing is the way it is or whatever, but it almost feels like he has more control than anybody else. Like he almost feels like the puppet master, where he's controlling his ball and the tournament and the field and the everything. And that's kind of a weird way to look at it, but that's just how you feel when you're out there. I don't know that you can quantify that. I don't think there's stats around it, but I never feel that with Scotty. He's obviously tremendous and gifted and an amazing winner, and had one of the best 100 start, like the first 100 starts on the PGA Tour to his career. But man, Rahm, and again, this is not quantifiable, and Scotty's been a better ball striker, but Rahm just, it feels like he's in control of everything.
He's the sun, and everyone just orbits around him.
It kind of feels like that, right?
Yeah.
Even in a way that maybe Rory doesn't or JT doesn't. And that's not to say that those guys are, you know, not going to win. I'm just telling you like how I feel when I'm around like the entire field.
Completely agree. Speaking of a couple of those other notables, just quickly here, Xander goes out, shoots a 68 four under. He's in the mix. Cantlay, we already mentioned, in the mix. Rory McIlroy salvaged one at the end. He's one over 73, which is not good, Kyle, but it's actually not horrible. He is currently in a tie for 68th. He is seemingly going to be on the correct end of the draw here. The scoring average was a hair over par, so he didn't even lose a full stroke to par, but around Bay Hill, you know, Rory not taking advantage of some of the opportunities. I mean, he made a double on a par five, which is not very Rory McIlroy-esque.
No, that's not good. Okay, so I watched some of his round. I haven't seen his numbers. I'm going to guess his approach play, his approach numbers were not good based on what I watched.
He was dead even on approach.
Okay.
Which for him is not good.
For sure, especially this year. He's been terrific with his iron play so far this year. Listen, it's one round. You don't want to overact one round, but I did say coming into this week, this is a semi-important run for Rory going into the Masters. I mean, listen, like he can be great in any given week. We saw that last year when he missed the cut at San Antonio, and then he finished a second at the Masters. So it's not like he necessarily needs momentum, but I think if you had to choose, you would have it, right? Like you would rather have it than not have it. And I think there's a sense of like, let's say he misses the cut here. I don't think he's going to, or finishes T27 or T30 or whatever, and then doesn't play well at the Players next week. I don't know. Like what is, What's the vibe around Rory right now? It's certainly not what it is around Rahm and Scheffler.
No, that might be good. We talked about this a little bit. Like, is there any scenario in which Rory McIlroy now year what 11?
It's like more than that.
Okay.
Are you talking about at Augusta?
Yes.
I think it's like 14.
Okay, so it's probably what 8 of trying to complete the career Grand Slam.
Oh, 14. So not, yeah, 8 or 9.
Okay. So is there any scenario in which year 9 of trying to complete the career Grand Slam that Rory McIlroy flies under the radar into Augusta National? And would that be good for him? Or is it just not? It's just impossible. I mean, Tiger will be there. Rahm might have 3 more wins before we get there. Scotty will be defending. The Live guys will be there. Is there any scenario in which Rory is storyline 6?
I don't know. I mean, what we definitely do not need to get into this after the first round of the Arnold Palmer. But what is the path? This is a little bit like my question of like, what is the path for Liv to succeed? Because I don't know what it is or to make money. What is the path for Rory to win the Masters? Is it like to you personally? Is it coming in as a world beater? Nobody can beat him on fire. Like, can't lose to anybody, thumping his chest, shooting 65 in round one. It's over. Vince Carter after 18 holes. Or is it missing the cut at the Texas Open, changing his ball, going into Augusta, a little bit lost, and then he shoots like 69 in round one. And you're like, oh, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden he just pops on the weekend. You're like, oh my gosh, Rory's going to win the Masters.
Yeah. I actually kind of liked the blueprint from last year, minus how far up Scotty was, right? Where it's just like this freedom, this chaser's freedom to get into it on the weekend where he hangs around and whatever. And something happens at the top, and things shake up, and the dust settles with 5 holes to go, and he's tied for the lead. And now it's like, yeah. Let's go.
The problem is that's not how he wins traditionally. And it's not how really anybody, it's very difficult to win that way, right? And there's a reason for that. And Rory is the one of the great front runners in golf history, right? Where he just starts doing stuff where you're like, oh, this is, I mean, kind of what Scotty did last year. The problem is, I think he's at the point in his career with Augusta where, let's say he somehow shoots like 365s here, wins Arnold Palmer, wins Players, finishes 3rd in match play, and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is the year. I almost feel like he's at the point in his career where he would get so in his own head about, yes, okay, this is my last great shot at it. I'm right. Playing the best I'm ever going to play this, and then shoot like 75 in round one.
Correct. Right. So that's why we need low expectations, get hot on Friday, get in the mix, and then just kind of chaos and he comes out of it.
Yeah. Maybe. I think you'd rather have momentum than not, but momentum for somebody like Rory create some, I think, mental hurdles that are not present for everybody else. So I'm talking myself into like 9 different things here. I don't really know what the best route for him is. I just know he's not playing the kind of golf he was at the end of 2023 or 2022. And I'm curious about just how that goes over the next month going into the Masters. I think that's a really big storyline. One of the top 3 or 4 storylines is not Rory and the Masters, but Rory leading up to the Masters and where his game is at.
Believe it or not, this is a round one recap for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and we will have the betting allegedly odds to win this event. And we do have to have a quick conversation around the new elevated event format that the PGA Tour is seemingly going to adopt for 2024. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So's
okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. The betting odds, John Rahm nearly already even money against the rest of the field. Plus 140.
I saw that.
Plus 140 over at Caesars. Scotty Scheffler, 7.5 to 1. He's obviously three shots back looking to defend his title. Xander Schauffele, 12 to 1, along with Patrick Cantlay. Cam Young's odds have dropped from 36 to 1 pre-event to 18 to 1. And then Ricky Fowler at 24, Keegan Bradley at 28 KP. That's the top of the board there.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about this, Rick, is I see Ricky Fowler's name. I see Keegan Bradley's name. I see Cam Young's name. I don't see Jordan Spieth's name.
Yeah, and that's the one that I've circled. 30 to 1. Three shots back, prolific winner, Jordan Spieth, 30 to 1. So are you that implies, because he is tied with Xander, he is tied with Cantlay. That implies that those two guys are 2.5 times as likely to win from this same spot at the API than Jordan Spieth is. Is that? That does not seem reasonable.
No, it doesn't. By the end of this pod, I'm going to have finished my my numbers on him. But it does not. I just wrote a recap of round one for CBSSports.com. And Spieth was the name that I called out. Do I think he's going to win Arnold Palmer? No, not really. But do I think he's better at 30 than Cantlay at 12? Kinda. Right? Like,
that's the number that stood out by far.
And this was my headline on it, is don't let Spieth's putter get hot, because Spieth starts bucking his head on these greens and it's going to be a boat race. I don't know. It was just a curious line after what he did and he's been hitting the ball pretty well for three or four tournaments. Pebble wasn't great, but we talked about it in Phoenix, right? Like, he hit it well.
He's also just like capable of winning despite himself kind of deal, right? Like what he did at Harbortown last year, which is one of the most strokes a winner has ever lost with the putter, like in the shot link era. I think there was only a handful of other guys who had been like, he's capable of winning in ways you're not supposed to win. And to say that he is 2.5, or at least Cantlay and Xander are 2.5 times more likely to win than him, is like, feels very wrong.
Okay, I've got the numbers. Seven starts. So this is 4 in Phoenix, I think. Yeah, 4 in Phoenix, missed the cut at Genesis, so 2 there, and then 1 this week. So 7 total. He's gained 13 strokes on approach and lost 4.5 on the greens.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So that's a 2-stroke per round rate on approach is like elite, 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 insane stuff. And even though he's been struggling with the putter, like, that's well below his any type of baseline that you want to go with. Like, this is, again, this feels like the pendulum is going to swing back too far. Like, the tide has gone way out. It's coming way in, right? Take your 30 to 1 ticket and get to higher ground.
Yeah. Or whatever. What's his Producer Josh, can you pull up the Masters numbers? I can't believe we're talking about the Masters today, but whatever his Masters number is, I bet it's shorter when we get to Augusta. It's probably, wait, let me guess. I bet it's he's impossible there. 18? I don't
20,
know.
20.
Okay.
20 to 1.
I bet it's 14 on Thursday of the Masters.
For sure. He'll be bet down like crazy. Here are the guys that are ahead of him, shorter odds. Colin Morikawa, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, Cam Smith, I've heard of him, Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm.
What's Rory at?
9-1.
Would you rather have Rory at 9 or Spieth at 18?
Rory at 9.
I'd rather have Spieth at 9, I think. I'd rather have Spieth at 9 than Rory at 18.
You're sick. The new format. So let's talk
about Oh, gosh.
Golf Twitter is very upset about this. So
I had to take I took 24 hours off. I couldn't do it.
I guess this is, I don't know what's official and what's not official, but this has been what approved by the people, the players, the committee. I don't know. There's an official thing about this where basically there will be the designated events are likely going to be fields of 70 to 78 players with no cut. The other items that have come out of this new structure is that the PIP will come down, which I think is smart. The other things that will come out is essentially the cadence of these elevated events, which will likely be 2 elevated events, 3 non-elevated events, 2 elevated events, 3 non-elevated events, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea being that on those 3 non-elevated events, they're like little sprints where golfers can earn their way into elevated events. So, for example, Honda Classic last week, non-elevated event. Let's say that was the first one of a little sprint. Chris Kirk would get in because he won. But like Eric Cole would be very much in the mix to get into the next pair of elevated events because he had a good start there, and guys can earn their way in by getting hot.
Yeah, so we could do a whole pod on this. By the way, breaking news from Golf Week, Adam Shupak reporting that Pebble is going to be a designated event next year. Not shocking, because I think Jack Nicklaus talked about this on the broadcast last week.
Don't tell your secrets to Jack. He's going to go on air and spill the beans.
Yeah, that was weird. But I'm curious about what... just what that looks like with the other... Sorry, having microphone troubles. What that looks like with happening? I don't know what that looks like with the other designated events. I think, Rick, that I have. So this report first comes out from Eamon Lynch, and it was like this cascading effect throughout the day where you would get press conferences with guys talking about it. You'd get people's takes on it. You get video. I mean, there was just so much information that kept coming out. And my initial reaction, Rick, was like, man, this is not good. I don't like this. It felt WGC-ish to me. And I think I was wrong about that. I think it is mostly good. And I think the reason is it makes more things important than are important right now. Right now, the Valspar Championship doesn't, like, what does it mean? Like, what are we doing?
I see what you're saying.
Now, if X number of guys from the Valspar can get into whatever the next elevated event is,
right,
all of a sudden the Valspar has tremendous meaning because it sort of feeds into this King of the Hill type hierarchy, right? And I think the other thing that it gives a lot of meaning to is the FedEx Cup, because, and this kind of flew under the radar. Dan Rappaport had a memo from Monahan to the players, and it said the designated events are no longer mandatory, and they would be releasing new FedEx Cup structures for all the tournaments. And that's good because it's going to incentivize, like before Joseph Almagni was talking about this, John Rahm's incentivized to play the 3M, to play Wyndham, to play the bad events if he actually wanted to win the FedEx Cup, like if that was his real goal. And so if I say, oh, well, John Rahm's not playing those events, then the implication is he doesn't really care about the FedEx Cup, which the implication is the FedEx Cup doesn't matter, right? It's sort of baked into the league, and you can tell it doesn't matter because that's the implication, right? And so now the FedEx Cup is going to matter. The FedEx Cup points at the end of the year, because the top 50 get into the designated events the following year, FedEx Cup matters. January FedEx Cup standings, guess what? They matter, because 10 guys or whatever are getting into the next designated event. So it just, it kind of heightens the importance of some stuff.
Okay. I generally agree with your take. I do like the idea that, right, the Valspar and the Honda are going to matter more because it's a natural pathway into the events that are going to matter more. I'm on board with that. I think that is sellable. I think if it is not called the Whoop Sprint to Riviera, we're doing something wrong here, right? Like, go sell that right now. The only problem I have is 78 players with no cut.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the part that I don't like.
Why can't we do 100 players with a cut?
Well, that was Andy Johnson's proposal, and he wrote an article for the Fried Egg that I thought was really good. Max Homa's argument against that was, and I think this was from Monahan, was that it makes the Honda you don't get names or players in that event. Therefore, the Honda will eventually go away, which I'm curious what you think about that.
It doesn't have to if you rotate the elevated events and you sell your sponsorships based on once out of every 4 years, Honda is getting an elevated event. The other argument around it ensures the top players are going to be there on the weekend so that sponsors are getting Rory on Saturday and Sunday. In my opinion, I understand it, is BS garbage. I don't care about that. If you know who cares about that? The CEO of Workday cares about that. I don't care about that. These guys make a ton of cuts. And if you are getting 20 stars in these events for 100 players and a T65 and tie cut, are two guys going to miss the cut and you're going to be left with 18 stars? Am I supposed to be offended by that as a fan?
Wait, hold on. Give me that scenario again.
So here's the argument, right, is we need our stars here on the weekend. And no cut guarantees that they're going to be here on the weekend.
I'm with you. I hate the no cut. Here's the thing that felt a little have your cake and eat it too-ish, to use a term that was blown up last year. We're a meritocracy. That's what we're staking our future on. We're the meritocracy. We're the competitive league. We're the one that matters. And I think this does reflect that. However, the no cut thing is not, it's almost like you're trying to have the competitiveness with also the entertainment side, which is like, most people are not you, Rick. Most people just want to go have a beer at the Phoenix Open and see JT play two holes. I mean, we experience that, right?
Yes.
And so you're a little bit trying to have the competitive and the entertainment with the no cut and the sponsor exemption. Four sponsor exemptions into these designated events, I don't love that, because I get that it's like just create a Tiger exemption. I don't care what you do with Tiger. Don't give me four sponsor exemptions, because at that point, you know, Rory said on Wednesday, like, hey, if you don't play well at these top events, you're not going to be in them next year. Well, that's not true for Rory and for JT. And think about Ricky Fowler. I was thinking about him today. You know what he would have been in for the last 5 years, even though he was playing bad golf? All the designated events. That's not good. Like, if you truly want a meritocracy, that's not a good look for your league. If you want a Tiger only exemption, whatever. I don't care. Like, he's earned whatever you want to give him, but don't. I didn't love like sort of the mixture of entertainment and meritocracy.
You've been very good at reminding people that Jay Monahan has an unenviable position in which he has stakeholders that he needs to make them all happy. Sponsors, players like Rory McIlroy, players like Bo Hostler, fans, different segments of fans. He has to make them all happy, and their desires, wants, and needs rarely overlap. It is a very unenviable position to be in. So I understand the difficulty here. And I think for the most part, the changes that have been made are generally all very good. I just personally think we should be at a little bit larger fields with a cut. The other thing, Kyle,
I agree, by the way, I don't disagree with that. We're on the same page with that. It's a small thing to quibble over, I guess. I think the other thing it does, there is going to be churn like in the designated events, which is a good thing, which there's not in, it's not LIV, because there's very, very little churn in LIV year over year. There's actually more churn week or designated event to designated event on the PGA Tour than there is year over year on LIV, which is, so save your arguments on that. I forgot the other thing I was going to say. What were you just talking about?
We were just saying that this is an unenviable position to be in, and that there are different stakeholders, and it's generally a good thing, but the no cut.
Oh yeah. I think what's interesting, and this was sort of the argument I was trying to make on Wednesday, is what they did is sort of shine a light on the middle class, where the middle class is now going to be playing more of the Honda Classic stuff and the Valspar stuff or whatever the non-designated events are. And that almost, it almost pushes down the guys on the Korn Ferry who are trying to rise up. Now, the argument is like, if guys are truly great on the Korn Ferry, they're trying to rise up, they should be able to beat the Chris Kirks and the Billy Horschels, or Billy Horschel's not middle class, but whoever the middle class guys are that are getting pushed down into the Honda and the Valspar. So I don't know. I don't know where I eventually land on that.
I have two more things. One, I think, is we should probably also remember that, think about how much has changed in the last 18 or 12 months. Like, we might do 1 year of this, and there might be, they might say, okay, 1 hour, we're going to go to 120. You know what I mean? Like I think there's a lot of stuff that is still going to change, or could change. My other thing, Kyle, and this is completely, so I'm now officially on the record. I think this is generally very good. I would prefer, 100 or 120 with a cut. I'm on the record with that. I also think, just from an optics standpoint, that if we sat in a room, you and I sat in a room with all of our stakeholders, and the conclusion that we came to, that the best thing that we could do was 78 players and no cut, I think someone in the room should have said, hey guys, Liv's going to like torch us for this. Should we just like go to 100 and have a cut? Should we just do 70 and like top 50 get through to a cut? You know what I mean? Like I just couldn't believe that after all of this, optics wise, they allowed this to happen.
It's a good point. And Spieth actually talked about that today. He was interviewed about it, and he said, listen, like LIV didn't even really come up in our meetings. And you're like, well, maybe it should have. But you know what I would have done with that, Rick? I would have said, hey, we're going to be like the Masters. We're going to have not U.S. Open fields, but we're going to have like Masters fields. And you almost attach the psychology of it to Augusta instead of to LIV, right? And that's just a much better attachment. And you say, hey, we're going to have 90 player fields or 80, whatever. You could do it in the 80s. I mean, the Masters has 85 player fields. And then on the weekend, we're going to cut it down to 50. And you're like, man, that actually is like, that's kind of a meaningful cut, right? And again, the commercialization of that, I don't think it necessarily works, or at least that's the argument that the tour would make. But if you truly wanted like a competitive meritocracy, like this is the real deal type stuff, I think that would have been a pretty good move.
Yes, I agree. So that's basically that. Anything else that we missed on this news?
Well, I wish they would kind of unleash the Korn Ferry stuff. And so you could almost have this storyline of like, hey, this guy was a qualifier into the Korn Ferry Tour this year, and he played his way into the non-elevated, and then he played his way into the elevated, which would be just like it would be like one of those English Premier League stories, but instead of over years, it's over weeks or months, which is sort of how golf works. I think that would be, and maybe they will eventually do that. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, there is kind of an opportunity. I don't want to say to like do away with the Korn Ferry, but you could almost have, you're naturally going to get now there's three levels. Now there's going to be basically three tours. It's going to be PGA Tour Plus, PGA Tour, Korn Ferry, where if they were much more integrated with one another, like I would love to see an integrated ranking system, right? Where guys can, I don't know, kind of fly up, fly down, get into these events, make runs. I'm speaking of things I know nothing about, and I'm sure logistically it is like way harder, but I think that would be pretty cool.
What do you think the PGA Tour should use as their ranking system if they were to implement that? What do you think was suggested that they should use if they did something like that?
I'm sure it's the SI Golf Rex.
I think you know the actual answer.
I think I do.
Let's see. I had a couple more things. That might have been it. I think we talked about it. I loved the, and I think the thing that they nailed is this idea that Eric Cole can play his way into the designated events.
Yes. Like, and you know what? Until you said that, I was kind of like, when you were like, the Valspar is now more important, I was like, actually, yeah, it kind of is now, because it used to be nothing. And
well, it used to just be like, it kind of was like this with like a little hump every now and then.
Yeah. Now it's actually pretty darn meaningful. This. Yeah. It's a path. It's a pathway.
Yeah, and I don't agree. I think strangely, the tour almost made the non-designated. They improved those almost more than they improved the designated.
Yeah, they kind of did.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think you could make that argument. I don't know if we got to see some of this stuff play out, because I think it's going to be – I think the frustrating thing that I had is, like, you go to Phoenix this year. You went to Riviera this year. Those are – freaking big time all world events. Mm-hmm. And then the tour is like, actually, we're gonna change those a little bit. And you're like, they seem so perfect, right?
Yeah, that was the other thing. The current elevated event system has been a raging success. By the way, let's change it.
Exactly. And I think you could have done that with, again, by going to 100 or 90 or whatever and having the cut, and people would have been like, I think I can get on board with that. But just the 78 with no cut is, it's too much. It's too much change from like the success that they're currently having, I think.
I agree.
And it makes Thursday and Friday not as meaningful.
Correct. Yes. Exactly.
Our two best Tiger moments from the last 2 years have been Tiger. Well, I guess playing wise, have been Tiger trying to make the cut at Riviera and Tiger trying to make the cut at Southern Hills. Right. I mean, the Open was different because that was a whole other thing, but I don't know. It just creates some meaning. Like, think about the cut at the Masters. That's a big deal to make the cut at the Masters. It's meaningful. And I think you can kind of get some of that on the tour, except when you eliminate the cut altogether.
Right. It might change. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. Okay. Well, our 15-minute round one Arnold Palmer Invitational recap has now gone 47 and a half minutes. So we are in mid-season form on these. Dare I ask anything else that we need to talk about before we get out of here?
I think that's it. We could go another hour on this, but a fascinating week, a fun day of golf, and we'll be back to wrap it up on you and I. You'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back on Sunday to wrap it up.
I love it. All right. Big thanks to producer Josh. If you are not watching on YouTube, get your act together. We've got graphics, we've got shots, we've got a bunch of stuff. Join us on YouTube. Follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.